Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope. And I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and I'm absolutely delighted to be joined today by Sharon Crandall to discuss the issue of housing, housing insecurity, housing precarity, the challenge facing renters and tenants. And Sharon's going to tell us a little bit about her own story. And it's something that I have been trying to highlight in recent years, is the personal impact and the human side of the housing crisis. And I've been encouraging, as listeners would know very well, trying to get as much as possible people's voices who are being directly affected by this out into the public domain, because I think there's still a lack of understanding, unfortunately, out there of the real human catastrophe that is going on. It is a humanitarian crisis, I feel. The extent of evictions, the extent of dislocation, the impact on people. And so if you do have your own housing circumstance, or you know of people that you would like to talk about on Reboot Republic, please, I would encourage you to come on, have a chat, and we can try and get more and more people talking about it. And hopefully it will bring the social change that we saw in repeal in marriage equality and bring about a right to housing and end this housing crisis in this country. Sharon, thank you so much for joining us today. Sharon now worked for 2 years with the Tenants Union of Washington State to get legislation passed to protect tenants from unfair evictions and also train tenants to advocate for themselves. And she returned to Ireland and to a housing crisis, she said is worse than the US, and she is looking for a new rental property in February of next year. Sharon, thank you so much for coming on today to Reboot Republic.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sharon, it can't be easy to come on and talk about your own housing situation. But maybe you could, before we get on to that, maybe you could just outline a little bit about, you know, what you did in the States, because it sounds really interesting and very relevant in terms of the tenants union and tenants activism there.
Yes. So we were living in Ireland and had a council house. And in 2017, I decided to move us back to the United States for education for my son, who was a minor, and also just for job opportunities, because we still weren't coming out of the recession very well in rural areas. And so we moved back, and I moved to Spokane, Washington, which I had gone to university there and had rented there extensively. And it was always a well-kept secret that the housing was fantastic and very, very affordable. And when I went back, I had researched, you know, the economy had improved a lot, which was a big concern of mine. And I knew the schools were good because I had done student teaching. But what I didn't know is that so many people had lost their homes during the recession in the U.S. that, you know, most of the larger cities in the U.S., 50% of people are renting now. So that's put a huge pressure on the housing market, a very aging housing market. And also the prices are sky high. And so when they got very high in, say, places like San Francisco, which are very expensive anyways, people moved from California to Spokane and bought a lake house and a main house for the same money that they had in California. So it drove rents very, very high, and it's still experiencing a lot. So I got involved with a disreputable landlord who tried to steal my deposit. And a colleague at work said, go to Tenants Union of Washington State, they will help you. So I've always been very enterprising. And so I went, I found them, I Googled them, I found them, I went in, and they helped me. But what I found out was that the landlord actually technically had the right to keep my deposit, even though I had done nothing. And so I thought to myself, there's no way that man is taking my money. Yeah. And how many people has he taken money from? It was sort of, it's called a one-way lease, where they could raise your rent because you weren't in a formal lease. But if you left before the term was over, then you forfeited your deposit.
Okay.
And Seattle had made that illegal, but the whole state hadn't. Right. And so there was this loophole. So we campaigned for that, and we got the law changed.
Wow.
SB, in the Olympia, it passed. We were delighted. And then we started working on, tenants unions are really set up to help people advocate for themselves. So they're a framework. But what they're interested in getting people on board to tell them what their rights are, how to stand up for themselves, how to have you stand up for each other, because a lot of people of color would be a lot more vulnerable to speak for themselves. Yeah. They have a much higher rate of being evicted or being treated badly. And so how to advocate for each other and how to build that movement, right? Yeah. And it sounded a little wonky at first, but when you get into it, it brings up basically all the cracks in the seam of society, because all the people that were involved in racial justice. They were involved because they were formerly homeless. They were food insecure. We found out very quickly that if you serve food at these meetings, they come because they're hungry. And that's sad, but true, you know? And a lot of them are people that are single who are very caught quite hard in this economy because it's so expensive and, you know, wages haven't gone up as much as the rate of inflation. So if you're single and trying to make it on one income, and especially one income with kids, so a lot of parents that had disabled children as carers in the US and here are caught very badly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so you begin to see just through talking to the people that you were hanging out with that, you know, that were getting their stories, and the stories, you know, the emphasis on the education is with the stories because the stories are powerful. Yeah. Because when we tell our stories, people cannot claim that you are a once-off. You're not a liar. This is the truth. And you're standing up for yourself. And there's actually such a relief to have that power to actually tell your genuine story of what happened to you. And so we went to City Hall, and it was filmed. And we stood in front of them. And the landlords came out in fierce force. The landlords paid an awful lot of money during elections to elect city councilors that are landlords and are pro-landlord.
Yeah.
So, you know, it took the director of tenants union, it took her, you know, 8 years of solid work to get to the point where we were starting to get legislative turning that tide so that we were getting progress made. And they've made some progress since I've moved back. As well, you know, they've gotten rent control now, which was unheard of, you know, they're going for rent control in the next legislative session, which was unheard of not long ago. You know, so, you know, I suppose getting, you know, the way the law was set up, individuals wouldn't qualify for any legal assistance, but landlords could afford all the legal assistance their money could buy.
Yeah.
So, you know, they campaigned and they, you know, created a program where they're providing legal assistance, you know, for tenants. That's a big thing, you know, trying to get just cause eviction, which is a little confusingly worded, but basically it says there's five, however many you want to state, but say just for the sake of being easy, there's five reasons why a landlord can evict you.
Yeah.
Only those five. And they can't do it for any reason. They can't do it on a whim. They can't just throw you out to the mercy of whatever, especially in a housing crisis, you know. So it gives tenants some protections because it was quite clear that there was almost no protections. Now, coming back here, I knew it would be difficult to find a rental, and we found one, and we only have it for a short time longer. But I didn't realize it was as bad as it is everywhere.
Yeah.
So this was only starting to really happen before we moved. So, you know, I of course regret giving up our council house, but, you know, we made a decision. It didn't work out so well. We're back here, and it's not comfortable. You know, it's really kind of frightening because I've always been a very positive person, but, you know, most of the rentals that are around here, a tremendous amount of housing has been built in my area. It's not for a lack of availability. It's that they're all being rented by Airbnb or something similar to tourists. Yeah. And I have no issue with tourism or with people that want to make a bit of money off of a spare house that they have and rent it out. But there used to be housing for people that wanted to live here. And, you know, I have been an active member of this community for 16 years. So I don't feel like what I'm asking for is unusual or extreme, you know. There's and I also know it's not just me, there's a lot of people in the same situation.
Yeah, no, I absolutely, no, there is. There is no doubt. Just to explain a little bit for listeners, where you're living and in terms of the country, you're Kerry, isn't that right?
Yeah, we're in West Kerry. So I was living in Dingle for a long time and we're farther out than that. I can see the water from where I'm sitting. So it's beautiful, but yeah. It is extremely, there's a lot of holiday homes, second homes. Now, there always was. There always have been. Kerry has always been very, very popular. But the council used to regulate, you know, the second home issue because they were tired of seeing these deserted villages. And so there was legislation passed, gosh, it must have been about 10 years ago. And I don't know what's happened since, if something was changed or if they're not enforcing it any longer. But multiple homes are being bought up by vultures like everywhere else. There's, you know, about 30 houses that are being finished in Dingle Town. I was told they were all purchased off the plans. I have no idea if they're going to be rented. But when we came back in October 2020, we moved back right before the lockdown, rent was about, we're paying below market value, luckily enough, but it was about $900, $950. And from November when we were looking for a place to February, it went to $1,500 in those few months.
Wow.
And most of the houses around here are that. Rent allowance is about $630 and you pay the rest and then you pay your rent to the council as well with HAP. I've been unwell, so I'm on HAP. And so, you know, it's impossible if you are on one income to rent a house. If you have 630 and 1500, I mean, it's impossible. It is literally a recipe for making people homeless. You know, that there has not been any kind of restraint on capping rents or rent control, some way of calming things down. I know that there's a pandemic on. We're all extremely aware of that. But people are working from home. And it still seems to me that progress can be made on these housing issues, which are totally critical. You know, I mean, we used to joke that people that would come traveling to Dingle, you know, for the summer would, you know, pitch a tent out and sleep out the summer. And they thought it was great lark for the summer.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't want people doing that year round. That's just not... The weather is terrible in the winter. You know, you wouldn't leave a dog or a cat out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it does seem like it's a critical enough issue, and yet I've seen nothing from a number of councils. I don't know if they're kind of waiting on tenterhooks for the government to do something about it first.
And just, Sharon, just in terms of your own kind of situation a bit, it's something I'd like to... you know, maybe ask you to talk a little bit about it. Is that impact? And maybe how old is your son now? Is
14 when we left, and he's just turned 18 now.
Yeah. And, you know, that's still, you know, it's your home that you're trying to, you know, you're trying to make a home. And as you say, you're, you know, having to leave in February of this year, like that sense of insecurity, maybe just describe that a little bit.
Well, he's just finally got up his first part-time job. He was very unhappy moving back. He's a teenager. Teenagers, it turns out, don't like to move.
No.
So, you know, he was very unhappy with me. He was very unhappy with life. So things are starting to turn around where he has a job. If I have to move to another part of the county or another part of Ireland because I can't find a house, you know, all that progress is undone, you know, and I know we've talked about how hard it is on the kids, but I mean, he has had, you know, some depression and it was really hard. There is absolutely no counselor that you can get right now, not even to be on a Zoom. It is very difficult to get, kids that age, they don't realize that life is about kind of treading water sometimes, that these things happen. Good times come, bad times come. You have to kind of tread water and it'll improve. And they don't know that because their experience is that it's not improving. It's from when they were young, they experienced the recession and austerity. And, you know, you telling your kids is only that it's going to get better is only making them think that you're lying to them. He tells me that you're lying to me. So, you know, it's very hard on kids. We have no security. I'm waiting on surgery, as it turns out. In the last couple of months, I found out I need to have surgery. I haven't even been able to get an appointment because the hospitals are, up to no good. I mean, I'm going to get to a stage where I won't even be able to do much of the moving when we have to move here. And we have to really move by February, before March anyways, because, you know, in this area, it'll holiday season will be starting and there'll be nothing available to rent. So if I can't get anything before the beginning of March, it will be fairly dire because there won't be anything available. They'll all be rented on Airbnb. They have contracts with Airbnb. So there's people out there that, you know, might want to rent to us, but if they've signed a contract with Airbnb, then they can't change their mind. So it is very, you know, nerve-wracking to feel like we're settled back in the area, that we have any kind of stability in terms of pursuing work. You know, he'd have to leave his job if we have to move in the area, and that's not good.
Yeah.
Just there's a lot of things on my mind, and I try not to dwell too hard on them until it gets to be more of the emergency zone, because I do like to sleep at night. But I have to say, it does begin to keep you awake, where you're wondering, like, you know, what options are there? I mean, I'm on the list for a council house again, and I spoke to the representative, and I said, what assistance is there? And they won't even help you find a place. That's not their job. I know some counties do. Kerry County Council does not help you find housing. You have to find it yourself. So that pressure, you know, the council obviously would carry a little bit more weight with, you know, assisting, you know, and securing housing than an individual person. But that's not what they do. So, you know, all you can do is put the feelers out to everybody that you know from all the years of living around the area and hope somebody is renovating and might have it ready, has a holiday home that, you know, you might be able to be in for a while. But I mean, really around this area, June, July, and August, you're not going to, everything is rented because the money is just too good, you know? And, you know, I understand it, but it doesn't make me feel any better, you know?
Yeah. No, it has to be just so extremely difficult. And, you know, and I have a teenager as well. And just that, you're right, you know, they absolutely do not like change and do not like moving. And you know, I'm really struck by what you're saying, you know, that, you know, they're saying to him that things are going to get better, and they do get better, but yet, you know, what they've seen, and they stop believing you, and
believing in society.
Yeah.
I've never experienced that, because in my lifetime, there have been institutions that I could believe in. And maybe life didn't go my way every single time, but I knew there was help, or there was, I knew the next step to go to. And it's not clear for young people now, because everything is a bit messed up. You know, it really is.
Yeah.
And until you stop and try to think of it from their point of view, I mean, you can think of it from, well, they're driving me crazy, but they are driving you crazy because everything is at a crossroads where we can decide to suffer, or we can decide that we need to stand up and be extremely vocal and not put up with it and break through and make some changes, because it's a long time coming. The austerity that we hit in the recession brutalized society. And there's a lot of it has, you know, all the cuts and things that were made in education, in health, and housing were not reinstated again, as far as I know. You can tell me if I'm wrong, but a lot of it seems like it hasn't been realigned. And, you know, there are some people that are doing perfectly well, but I do see that there never used to be food insecurity in Ireland.
Yeah.
That is just, I remember when I was in charge of Cub Scouts, we used to do canned food drives, and at Christmas, we would do Christmas caroling and accept food. And there was a soup kitchen in Tralee that was very small. It was through one of the churches. They just had a wee bit of food, mostly for seniors, you know, that might be on a hard time with their pension. And I mean, obviously there's one of those in every county now. And that was never the case, you know?
Yeah.
So kids see that, they see everything, and they know, you know, they might not say anything, but they do notice everything.
Yeah, they do. And they have to as well. Like, you can't not, no matter how much you try and protect them, you know, they feel your worry as well, you know, and they feel your lack of surety about the future.
Of course, you know, when I got COVID, when I was sure I had COVID in the US, we were living outside of Seattle, which is one of the first outbreak areas. I didn't realize I had COVID at first because my symptoms were different from what that was being reported. And then when I knew I had it, I was afraid to let him know because I thought it would terrify him. Yeah. Because I'm his mother.
Yeah.
I am the only parent he has. And so how can you drop them into an unprecedented health emergency and then have them worry about your being sick and about your long-term health issues from that? I mean, moving back here was a big, big step, but it was one of those gigantic things that I had to do for the better, it was the best move for both of us. But there's a lot of things that, you know, I suppose they look big when they grow up, but they're still quite young maturity-wise.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's very hard for them to wrap their heads around the difficult choices parents have to make. And so it's often better to hold back a bit because they don't know how to deal with that fear of being sick and what it might mean. And because adults don't really have great answers either. You know, I recovered. I know other people that have had COVID that have recovered. I know people that have died of COVID. I mean, that's quite a mixed message to try and explain to young people, you know.
Yeah. And then when you have the housing insecurity on top of that, that they, like, I'm sure, you know, does he know the situation in terms of having to move by February? Or
he does.
Yeah.
He's mad at me because he thinks I'm not looking. Okay. He's like, "You're not looking." And I was like, how do I tell him I'm pestering everybody that I can possibly think of that might have relations of relations and cousins or an uncle that has a house or somebody that decided they didn't want to bother renting because of COVID and might be able to let us have it for a year's lease. I mean, literally, I'm asking everybody, you know. I mean, it's just, I posted something on Twitter today. I'm not as fond of having to do it on social media, but you know, when it's getting down there time-wise, you know, things are getting a little bit hairy right now with COVID numbers. And so where are we going to be at Christmas? Where are we going to be after Christmas? It might be more difficult to find a place if people are in panic mode, if we end up in lockdown again. You know, all of this complicates everything. And so, you know, for people that are looking for housing, not just myself, I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot, you know.
No, it is. And something that, you know, is a fundamental requirement, you know, for people to live their lives, you know, a home. It's so, you know, it's upsetting. And it's why I try to do these and try to highlight it, because I think we have to hear this. We have to hear what is the reality and what it's doing to people, what this crisis is actually doing to people in their daily lives.
And the community, the CATU, the Community Action Tenants Union that's based out of Cork is expanding in Ireland. And I think they'll be a great resource for people, at least to be kind of a one-stop shop to get information about what their rights are. But I mean, in tenants union, there's tenants unions all over the world. And we do say housing is a human right.
Yeah.
Housing is a human right. First and foremost, it is a right that people, you know, they lose their health when they don't have housing. They lose their security. They lose their mental health sometimes. I mean, it is often that you see that people that were never, you know, involved in drug and alcohol issues do find that to self-medicate after they become houseless.
Yeah.
You know, all of these things, it's not like it's unrelated to so many other societal cracks that are there. So, I mean, we need to... Councils need to support tenants in helping them find housing if they're on the HAP scheme.
Yes.
You know, they need to make sure that people who are, there's a friend I was talking to on Twitter. She's has such a fierce, hard time applying for disability for housing, and there's no preference. I was told there was no preference for people that are disabled to get assistance with housing or be put up higher on the list as a preference. Those preferences for single parents or people that are disabled, those preferences are gone. And that does not seem right to me. I mean, if I was in a position of owning my own home, I would look at it and think, well, those people actually, they do need consideration because they are in a vulnerable position that for a country that is as rich as Ireland is, should be making the priorities that people are housed. You know, children that are unhoused, their education falls behind by 2 years for almost every year that they're unhoused. You know, I applaud the kids that, you know, graduate and get scholarships and do really well and move on. You'll see one of these movies of the week and their kids went to Harvard and they were in homeless, you know, living in a homeless shelter the entire time. And I think unbelievable, because the reality is most children suffer an awful lot when they have to constantly change schools or live in a car or live in a homeless shelter. That takes an awful toll on young children.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And we know that. And it's
we know that. And so what's the impetus to do something? What kickstarts the action then? Because that's the next step, that if the councils are waiting for the government and the government has a different priority, what can the people do then to start the ball rolling? Because somebody needs to, we need action, you know, at this stage, because the longer we wait, the more people, possibly myself, ends up, you know, in direct provision, I think they call it, you know, staying in a hotel.
Emergency accommodation.
I even asked them, I said, what is the process for emergency accommodation? And he says, well, I suppose you have to call back the main phone number and they'll give you a phone number to call. I mean, the housing fella didn't even know the number to give it to me, you know? So, I mean, I'm not trying to...
Do you even have to be thinking about possibly going to emergency accommodation?
Okay, well, this is my mentality, is I'm a very good organizer. And so I think of every single possibility and plan for all of them. Yeah. And so I need to know that information soon, because February is not, you know, coming up to the beginning of March is not really that far away. You know, so I need to know, because to be honest, even if I manage to get myself into housing for another year or two or whatever, then I may need to relay that information to somebody else, because that is what's going on. It is so rampant. It's not just a matter of people that, you know, I have a lot of, I've been told a lot of people have moved to Tralee, you know, because they couldn't get housing in the area.
Yeah.
And I'm looking farther, you know, afield than just this part of the peninsula. Most definitely I'm going over to Castlemaine and, you know, looking around. I don't want to go as far. Killarney is more expensive. Kenmare is more expensive. So it would have to be the Tralee area, I think, if I have to go further afield, where I will know virtually no one. But, you know, needs must. I mean, nobody wants to be without housing. But, you know, I do think that I'll need to have the information to pass on to other people as well, because that is just the way we're going. Unless they, even if they started today to put a plan together to start trying to help people on a real practical level, it takes time, you know. I mean, there's a limited amount of houses that will even take HAP assistance.
Yeah.
If their houses, if they're told they have to do a lot of renovations for HAP, a lot of people won't rent to you then.
Yeah.
And so then you're in trouble then, because you're out of maybe the accommodation you were in, you're out of that, you know? So it's, I think that until, you know, the council working from a position of strength more than the individual needs to help.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
more than they are. And there's, you know, because there's just not, you know, they're building council houses at the moment, but I'm assuming there's a massive list. I think there's a massive list everywhere for affordable housing and council housing.
Yeah, no, there are very, very long waiting lists everywhere. But I think that's a really important point to make, that in the housing assistance payment, that you as an individual are out there trying to find a private landlord who would house you and take it. Whereas, as you say, the council has, you know, weight as a local authority, as a body. If it was out there, you know, working with estate agents and trying to make a register of landlord, that it would be finding the properties and then allocate them. That would make much more logical sense than putting all this weight on individuals who are, you know, trying to get on with their daily lives and find, you know, and vulnerable, as you say, in terms of, you know, lone parents, people with disabilities, that really should be the council. You're right about that.
Yeah. And I do think that, you know, they help as much as the guidelines of their job are set out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what they need is they need to have their job. They need to be instructed that this is also now what we do. And yeah, they need to go forward. And doing that doesn't take a lot. they can do that from home if they're working from home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's some working from home limitations, but I mean, there's actually a lot that they can do, you know,
yeah.
and they have the power and they have the money.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, I've been told as a single parent, we don't rent to people with children. When I first moved here, I was like, what are you talking about? That's against the law. But you can't say that to a private landlord because, you know, they don't care. They get away with it. I have been lucky to have far more very nice landlords than I have had, you know, disreputable ones. So I've been lucky that way. But, you know, it doesn't seem like there's just, you know, I just wonder, is my luck running out? Are a lot of people's luck running out? You know, I have heard that the rates of rent have gone up much higher in Kerry than other parts of the country, too. And the wages aren't high. You know, they aren't.
Yeah.
They aren't.
Yeah. And just in terms of your own situation, is the landlord selling the property or is there a particular reason they're asking you to leave or is it just the lease?
She's been very nice, in fairness. I have to give it to her. She lives outside the country and she bought this house as a retirement piece for herself. And she is retiring and moving back and she's going to renovate the house and live here on the premises.
Yeah.
And she was here in September and looked at the house and her daughter's an architect. They aren't selling it so they can, they are saying it to get me out and raise the rent. They really are going to live here. You know, and she has been very, very nice. A lot of repairs need to be made. But like that, they're, you know, obviously only going to do so much because they're tearing walls out and modernizing the house more and, you know, expanding the square footage. They're doing a lot. But like the electricity, the plumbing, everything needs to be done in this house. And I was very, very lucky to find it, to be honest. But, you know, she's, you know, she's very genuine. I know of many landlords that aren't genuine, so I cannot say anything about her at all. She's been very nice.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. And in if you look kind of as trying to look forward, do you think that tenants in Ireland, or how do you see this? You know, you talked about action. There is the, you know, the Community Action Tenants Union, CATU, which is, as you say, trying to organize tenants. How do you see this panning out in terms of trying to get policy change for tenants?
Yeah, I think the tenants union movement coming to Ireland is a very good thing because, you know, it's a bit embarrassing when you say you can't find a place to live because people think it's because you don't pay your rent. A lot of people that are homeowners, maybe unless they have children that are caught in the rental market, a lot of people don't realize how bad it is. They just kind of get vague headlines. And so the tenants union makes people feel less like they're alone.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Because after a while, if you've got someone that's actually being very unpleasant to you, you can feel it's a bit like an abusive situation. And so you need the support of the other people to kind of help you with the laws. Changes in the laws, any kind of legal support that needs to be obtained, but like a one-stop kind of website where you can look up any amount of information. I will say the Tenants Union in Washington State has a brilliant website where you can look up everything. And also then just start being more public about, you know, we started writing a Tenants Bill of Rights. You know, I wrote letters for the newspaper, letters to the editor. I worked at the Daily Newspaper. And so I went, I walked right into the newsroom and I said, hello. I said, I need to put, you know, and I didn't move until I had my letter in for the next day, you know, and because we need people to write, we need people to talk, we need people to be an active presence. If you're not saying anything or doing anything, it's very easy to ignore.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's actually very hard in rural areas to show up in Dublin in March and do, no matter how much you believe in whatever cause, because you're pretty far from Dublin.
Yeah.
And, you know, for people that are immunosuppressed or whatever, you know, they can't easily travel during a pandemic. But the union links everybody together. It gives them a way to they've continued on doing all their meetings, not in person, but on Zoom. And you're getting all the information. You're getting people that, you know, I think a lot of people can't access the help they need. And the relief of not having to bang their head against phone call after phone call and bang their head against the wall to find that there's actually assistance there.
Yeah.
And And also then people actually become quite good at helping you with another problem. Like I said, it often housing issues expose all kinds of racial injustice, food insecurity, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, you find out you're able to help a parent with a disabled child who's having a hard time getting resource hours for their child that has ADHD. All of these different things come up. So the tenants union movement, you know, is really moving in the right direction because it's, you know, always, if you can always, any movement that helps people stand on their own two feet and learn how to represent themselves, that is a skill that will stand by them for life.
Yeah.
You know, being able to represent yourself, you know, a lot of people have a huge fear of speaking in public, and I used to be one of them, and I just got over it. So I always tell people, if I can speak in public after being nearly blacking out with fear when I was younger, if I can do it now, almost anybody could do it. You know that.
And how did you get over it?
You know, I started when I was in secondary school, because when I was young, we changed schools so many times. I used to have to keep remaking friends every time we changed schools, that if I wanted to have friends and I wanted to have fun and laugh.
Yeah.
I was afraid.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and I think that's, you know, a drive that a lot of young people have, is they want to socialize and be together. And so I got over it that way. And even in university, when I was forced to take, I went to a Jesuit university. We had to take speech class for an entire semester and get up in front of total. It was awful. The whole night before, I would be petrified.
Yeah.
I just got over it. It just, the needs of my life forced me to get over it.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it's really, you know, I have to say, you're so articulate and so clear and calm in a situation which is really just so hard. I just like to thank you for, you know, really speaking about it, because I hope that more people will be inspired and encouraged by you, because it can't be easy to talk about this.
I tell you, there was one time I was nearly homeless. I was about 10 hours away from being homeless before I found a place to rent. And I actually had such a positive attitude, and I wasn't worried, because I always figure real anxiety and worry is a waste of energy. So avoid it as long as you can. But I went into I was at work, and I went into the bathroom at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I had myself a good old cry. I thought, we are really facing having to give my cats up into foster care. My son and I are going to have to go to a homeless shelter. I don't know what we're going to do with our stuff. And I found an apartment, but that was literally 10 hours away from being completely homeless. And I honestly, you know, I keep a good attitude because that's the only way I know. And I hope people can keep going and keep strong and rely on, I've had good friends that are standing by me too, that will help and do anything for you. So I, you know, I have the feeling it'll work out, but I hope it works out for all of us, because, you know, I really believe that when one of you is successful, you bring other people with you. And, you know, and it's going to need to be more than just us. You know, we need some support from the powers that be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, in you telling your story and, you know, us giving this, you know, in Reboot Republic in the podcast, you know, the platform to do that, the space to do it, hopefully it will add, I believe it is adding to the kind of societal pressure that's moving towards that change, that's what's needed. When we look at what is happening, I absolutely think the politicians and government are completely disconnected from this human crisis that's going on. And what we need to do is to show others that this is a crisis and a humanitarian one. And then I believe that most Irish people, you know, that most people living in this country, when they realize it and see it, you know, and I know they do not want this. They want a society where everyone has the human right to a home, where everyone has a secure, affordable home. And I think that the change is coming. I think it's going to take some time, but I do believe, like, when yourself and others speak out over this, that it's going to create a wave of pressure that government will have to change. And I hope that is, I do believe that's coming, but the question is how long it's going to take. And in your own situation, maybe you could just let people know. So you're looking for somewhere in Kerry, because you never know who's listening. That you're looking for somewhere in Kerry, ideally close to Dingle. Would that be correct? In that region?
Because my son is doing very well in his new job, and I would really like him not to have to leave it.
Okay. Okay.
And it would. We've lived here 16 years. You know.
Yeah. 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 Well, listen, I'm actually going speaking at an event in Dingle called Ireland's Edge, which is on housing. So I will give a shout out absolutely for you at that and see if that.
When are you going to be in Dingle?
I'm going to be in Dingle on the 27th. It's an event called Ireland's Edge, as I said, but unfortunately it's sold out. But it's going to be streamed live. And you can go to Ireland's Edge to check that out. It's as part of the Other Voices. The Other Voices event. But absolutely, I will give a shout out there to see if anybody has anywhere to rent, because I will tell your story because I think it's a really important one. And I will continue to tell them wherever I can and whatever opportunity I get. Listen, Sharon, thank you so much for speaking out today and for telling us your story.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, that's great. And Sharon, as you said, you know, it's a home is fundamental. It's a human right. And that's what we have to make it in this country.
Housing is a human right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, thanks. And as I said, if you do know anyone in Kerry who has a rental property, please, you can contact us and let us know. We'll let Sharon know. Sharon, you're on Twitter. What's your handle?
Kerry Felter.
Kerry Felter. That's KerryFelter. If you want to check, contact Sharon herself, Kerry Felter on Twitter. And if you do know anybody, or if you're interested yourself in telling your story in terms of how the housing crisis is impacting on you, please, we want to get these stories out there to build, as Sharon said, that sense of support amongst people, but also to show others what's happening and to build a movement of solidarity that can get housing fixed in this country. So you can contact me at Rory Hearn on Twitter or on Instagram. And also you can email us at rebootrepublic@gmail.com. And if you've any ideas for our shows in terms of guests or covers or cover people you want us to get on, or questions you have or comments on the show, please let us know. We love to hear from you. And we've been having really good positive feedback to the latest podcasts we've been covering. We had David telling his story, which was very powerful in terms of potential eviction there. We also spoke to a number of people who were attending the COP26 event and around climate change and inequality. And of course, we had a very interesting conversation with Louise Bayliss from Focus Ireland around homelessness and what was happening and what needs to be done. So you can check out those, listen to them back. And Reboot Republic is a completely independent media production produced by Tony Groves of Tortoise Shack Media. And we've no sponsorship. We rely on patrons, who are people who sign up for €2, €3, €5 every month, and they get access to the podcast first. It goes out to our patrons, and you support us to cover the costs of production, which are not insignificant. And without the patron supporters, we would not be able to keep producing these podcasts. So thank you to our patrons. And if you're not a patron, please consider supporting us so we can keep putting out voices like Sharon's. So thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all soon.